Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I put out some really big news today over at freekeen.com, and that is that Ron Paul, that's right, the Ron Paul, the libertarian presidential candidate, Ron Paul, has officially signed the Shire Society Declaration. Which I'm very excited about because we being a group of activists based in New Hampshire, created the Shire Society Declaration back in 2010. And it was a group effort. We kind of threw in a bunch of ideas on what was then the Free Keen forums, which are now the Shire Society forums that you actually just joined recently, Will.
Yeah.
And that's where, in fact, the original thread where we put this thing together still there for anybody that wants to go and see kind of how this was done. It was influenced heavily by L. Neil Smith's writings. He actually had written something very, very similar to it, and we based it off of that and made some what we considered to be important tweaks. And L. Neil Smith got mad about it, but too bad for him because we put it out there anyway. And Dobby Barker, who you know very well, the Muslim agorist, one of your partners over at Muslims for Liberty, he's also a very talented artist, and he did the calligraphy work with the fancy calligraphy pen on hemp paper, so you know, a proper kind of setup for a document that people would be signing, a historic document like this. At one time, you could purchase these things. I don't know if they're still available directly through him, but they're a limited edition, and so Stone had gotten one of them. And I guess throughout the weekend at this conference, he was having different people sign it. So Roger Ver from Bitcoin.com, a.k.a. Bitcoin Jesus, he put his name, his signature down on this very same declaration. And so when Ron Paul came off the stage, Stone, unrolled the declaration and then asked him if he would, take a look at it, if he was willing to sign it. And apparently Ron Paul, after looking at it, he said, sure, I agree with all of this. And then signed his name to the Shire Society Declaration. If you don't believe me, there's photographic evidence of it posted right now over at freekeen.com. In fact, the reason why it took me a while to actually put this news out there, because again, it happened in late September. The reason why it took 3 months is because I wanted the guy who had this stone, I wanted him to send me pictures of his signature, because the pictures that Derek Slopey took, who was one of the witnesses, and I trust Derek. I think he's a really great guy that runs agoristhosting.com.
Love Derek.
And but just, because the internet's going to question, it happened so fast that all the photos that Derek got were from behind Ron Paul signing. We are updating you on what's happened with Jody and Mark Emery. We had both of those folks on the show over the years a number of times, as Mark Emery was prosecuted, as you may recall, for selling seeds. Now, the thing is, he was selling seeds from Canada, but yet the Canadian government cooperated with the United States government, arrested Mark in Canada, and then cooperated with his extradition from Canada into the United States, where he was then found guilty and spent 5 years of his life in prison, where they did everything they could to keep him as far away from his wife in Vancouver as possible. So rather than holding him in SeaTec prison in Seattle, Washington, or in Washington State, they held him in, like, Mississippi. So you really couldn't get much further away as far as, holding a loved one and making somebody who cares about you have to travel, more than 1,000 miles to come see that person. That's what the federal government did to him. After spending 5 years in prison, he was released. And you would think that after spending 5 years in prison, that your typical activist would be pretty burned out, that they would be like, I'm done with my civil disobedience. Not Mark Emery. No, he wasn't done. In fact, he and his wife, Jody, they were involved with a group of people who opened up Cannabis Culture. You may not know Cannabis Culture. It's the old competitor to High Times magazines, the Canadian version, basically, of High Times. Here's the story from CBC, the government's own news agency in Canada. Prominent pot activists Jody and Mark Emery have pleaded guilty to a number of drug-related charges in a Toronto court, which fined them $195,000 each for this, according to Jody Emery. The pair also received 2 years of probation and cannot participate in the running of illegal marijuana dispensaries. I suspect they also can't participate in legal ones. But going on here, three others charged in the case were also sentenced to pay fines, but 17 more had their charges withdrawn as part of a deal. Mark Emery, the self-proclaimed Prince of Pot.
They snitched, basically, for running. Did they all the people who got off turn state its evidence?
No, I think the deal was that Mark goes down. I'm just going to guess. The deal was that Mark was willing to go down in return for the rest of them.
For the rest of them, yeah.
Because they were all working together. It was a public operation. This wasn't like an underground marijuana deal. They literally were throwing the doors open on retail locations
legally.
Well, CannaSense is was a U.S.-based healthcare company sending cannabis to medicinal users.
Yeah.
This was just anybody who's over 18 could walk in, or 21 or whatever, and buy marijuana from stores open to the public. Emery, who pleaded guilty to possession of marijuana for the purpose of trafficking and trafficking marijuana and possession of proceeds of crime of more than $5,000, he said, I even offered to go to jail for a year.
You guys love Roger Ver, but I just want to quickly ask you a question. What do you guys feel about mining being completely centralized and in the hands of just a few people?
I mean, I've heard that claim, but I don't know if I believe it. I mean, there are mining pools out there which involve thousands of people.
The mining, so that's completely unfactual. So the miners that work on Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, for that matter, or Bcash, don't say that in front of Roger Ver, but the miners that work on it have to have a lot of money, and they pretty much set up giant warehouses and create, economies of scale and make it so that pretty much the hands of all the mining, which means the central bank of all transactions, has to pass through only a few hands.
And when you say a few, few means three, and there's far more than three mining pools that are mining Bitcoin Core and Bitcoin Cash. So I don't agree with you. And in fact, I'm involved in Bitcoin mining as well. I'm mining Bitcoin Cash at the moment. And if you go to pool.bitcoin.com, I think you can get into that mining pool for as cheap as a few $100.
Basically, my question is this, right? The Lightning Network, so if you go on to explain what the Lightning Network is, it's basically a network that lays on top of the actual algorithm itself. And it allows everything you do on it to be exponentially greater, just to put it in simplified terms. So if you increase the block size, as Roger Ver says he wants to do, after Lightning Network comes, you actually get an exponential increase to each block, each size increase that you apply to the blocks, right?
I don't know anything about it. I'm taking your word for it, but go ahead.
So you can take my word for it, and anybody else is welcome to look up the Lightning Network, use Google, right? And anybody who looks it up right now will find that it is imminently happening, like within the next three months.
Roll it out. Looking forward to it. I really hope that they can fix this thing because it is a broke-ass bitch.
Let me ask you a question, right? So this thing is coming. The majority of the development community, including a lot of other people who were in Bitcoin before Roger Ver as developers, as well as a lot of people who came after, as well as a lot of people who don't own mining companies and have mining interests, because it's great that he spent a lot of money. But when you spend a dollar to make 10 and you control that much of the mining pool and you force a fork upon the Bitcoin Core community that they don't agree with because they're saying, wait a second, Lightning Network's on the way.
Well, hold on one moment here. How can you say what the Bitcoin community supports? We just heard the news literally just before the show started tonight that Coinbase, the world's largest, I don't know if it's the largest, but it's big. I mean, it's a mega company when it comes to cryptocurrency with I don't know how many millions of accounts, but Coinbase is humongous. Just today, apparently, they added Bitcoin Cash to their website. Now, keep in mind, this is like a week or less since blockchain.info, one of the other longest running, biggest, most influential wallet companies, Bitcoin wallet companies out there. They added full support for Bitcoin Cash last week. Then BitPay, another mega company that helps people accept Bitcoins on their website. And it had always just been Bitcoin only or Bitcoin Core only. BitPay announced that they're going to be rolling out more cryptocurrency support, starting with Bitcoin Cash. And now you've got Coinbase flipping on Bitcoin Cash. I mean, All the while, this guy's on our phone lines talking about how nobody likes Bitcoin Cash. Well, if nobody liked Bitcoin Cash, it wouldn't be worth over $3,000 per Bitcoin Cash, and it wouldn't be added to all these different websites that are supporting it out there. I want to see Bitcoin Core work. I really do. Yeah. Please, bring out the Lightning Network. Show us how wonderful of a technology this is, because all we hear from its supporters are, it's right around the corner. Look, they tested it. See? There it is. And maybe they are about to unfurl, you know, pull the curtain back and, you know, show what this Lightning Network is. But then again, I hear other things about this Lightning Network. Now, it's hard to know who to believe, okay? So I don't know what the truth is, but I heard recently from somebody who's sounded like a Lightning supporter. I think it was Chris Reitman, our Thursday night co-host here. He had told me that there's, or maybe it was him. Anyway, somebody told me you have to, like, set up a payment channel. So, Johnson, apparently on the Lightning Network, if I want to pay you for some work that you've done, we first need to set up a payment channel between us on this mm-hmm. Lightning Network. And apparently there's a cost to
setting up. Much like Lightning. Lightning actually sets up negative ions in the atmosphere.
On the Earth, right?
And then, you know, the positive, you know, it's like a sort of like channel of negative ions. And then all the energy flows through that
right,
channel.
And it comes from the Earth, right?
And
goes to the sky. Yeah. But apparently you've got to pay. I don't know if they said it was like $7 or something like that to set up this payment channel. And I'm like, if
that
that's true,
stupid.
Right, if that's true, it sounds really bureaucratic.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go into Corner News, the local, because the whole claim was that, oh, you want to buy a cup of coffee, just wait till the Lightning Network.
Earlier, you were talking about Bitcoin as opposed to fiat money. Johnson, you sort of kind of laughing about it, and I sort of kind of laugh with you. But on the other hand, you know, if you look at the definitions of fiat money, There are three main ones, right? One is that any money declared by government to be legal tender. Bitcoin fits that definition. It's legal tender in Germany.
Really?
Number two, that is correct.
Yeah. When did that happen?
Looks like 2016, huh. And I'll be happy to send you that article, right? Yeah. Even if it
so wait, that means every single
know,
business.
Bitcoin,
in, wait. So that means every single business in Germany accepts Bitcoin because they're legally obligated to do so, or does legal tender tender laws not work
the
same
the
way?
That's the third definition of fiat. The second definition.
Hold on, you're not understanding my question. You said that in Germany, Bitcoin is now considered legal tender. So what you're convincing me or attempting to convince me of is that every single business that I would walk into in Germany, I would be able to pay in Bitcoin because they all have the technology and assets with which to actually accept Bitcoin, know what it is, know how to do so, and are legally required to do so. That's what you're telling me, that Bitcoin is legal tender in Germany.
That is not what I'm telling you because, it's only something else.
There's fraud in coins. I mean, if somebody gives me a silver piece, I don't know if it's actually silver unless I engage in, you know, a few different types of tests to make sure, right?
Right. And
I
mean, how many of those actual tests, like, are you trusting the network or are you testing your Bitcoin personally? Right. How do you test your Bitcoin? Yourself.
You don't have to trust.
How do you objectively know?
So here's how. I can't know because I'm not a programmer. But if I needed to learn, if I wanted to, I could learn programming and get in there and actually read through the Bitcoin code or Dash or whatever. Because all of these things are open source. So unlike silver or gold or fiat currency, where you have to trust the issuer, in this case, you don't have to trust. You can verify. So as long as you know a code geek who can actually go in there and read the code, then they can go in and they can look for backdoors. They can look for fraud baked into the system. And there's not. And of course there's not, because there's thousands, there's billions of dollars in this system, and there's the incentive there for people to make sure that it's honest.
Yeah, and OpenSSL, it's also open source, right? It's also used by the industry and is responsible for billions of dollars. And a zero-day vulnerability sat there in plain sight for 20 years.
Is Bitcoin fiat in the sense that you're talking about it? Yes, it is. Bitcoin could absolutely go to zero. If a competitor comes along, that's better. And it's happening probably right now.
Beanie Babies, too. Yeah, Beanie Babies used to be worth a lot, and they're not worth squat now, probably,
so
right?
You have to pay attention.
That doesn't make them sound currency.
It's a commodity. Like any commodity, you have to be willing to move into another commodity if that commodity's value changes. If you want to continue to hold your wealth.
David, I want to thank you for the call tonight. You're welcome to go to bat at any time for gold and silver. I like gold and silver. I do. Yeah. I've got, you know, the crypto, Shirefree Church has a stash of gold and silver. But I'm sorry, gold and silver isn't worth much except for just holding on to fight inflation of the fiat money system. I cannot easily send gold or silver to anybody who's outside of this room. The government says they're going to make marijuana legal for recreational purposes up in Canada. However, some of their Canadian governments want to be the exclusive distributor of this new product. Well, an old product, but newly legal product. In Ontario, for instance, the marijuana, according to CBC.ca, will be sold by the provincial government in a series of dedicated stores, similar to how it sells liquor. The prosecution read out an agreed statement of facts on Monday that showed the substantial amount of cash earned at the numerous dispensaries. Quote, Mark and Jody Emery had established a sophisticated franchise model with the goal of operating dispensaries across Canada. In fact, what they had done, for listeners that weren't tuned in earlier, they literally threw the doors open on a series of dispensary locations. These aren't medical dispensaries. They were just selling cannabis to, I think, anybody over the age of 21 or 18, whichever one, but so-called legal adults were able to come in there, trade cash for cannabis, and walk out the door. According to Crown Attorney Kieran Gill, she said the police began Project Gator in 2016 to look into cannabis culture, the marijuana brand operated by the Emerys that moved into the burgeoning dispensary business. The prosecution said it was able to piece together the vast sums of money involved after police raided various cannabis culture locations across the country, along with raids at the company's headquarters in Vancouver. They found tens of thousands of documents, said Gill, from contracts to receipts. Yeah. That's because they were doing everything out in the open. They were doing everything, up front, having marijuana being purchased.
Oh, my God, yeah. A business had receipts.
Yeah. Oh, my God, people were actually buying marijuana. Imagine that. The prosecution said they found these documents. First, franchisees had to pay Cannabis Culture a $25,000 franchise fee plus a $3,000 monthly fee. Marijuana and cannabis products from weed to edibles to merchandise had to be procured by the franchisee.
I was up there in Montreal last Christmas visiting family and friends, and I couldn't believe it. The courage and the heroism of Mark Emery and Jody, their businesses were just open. Opening up in Montreal last Christmas season. So I was just there visiting, and my girlfriend and I, we've been living in the U.S. now for a while in California. A lot of this is readily available.
Right.
I still recommend you get it, not through the legal channels, because then you end up on all sorts of lists. Mm-hmm. But whatever, right? So in Canada, Mark Emery has been fighting that fight since he was selling seeds decades ago. So yep. He's always been a hero. And last Christmas, there we are, and we walk into a legal dispensary in Montreal. And of course, they can't sell to us because we're not residents and we don't have all the IDs and the medical tests and all that.
Right.
But one of the girls at the counter mentions that there's this group opening illegal cannabis stores in Montreal that day. That day was the day they were opening up, right? Yep. And my girlfriend and I were like, oh, let's go check it out, right? So we go out there, and sure enough, right, there's lines of people. If you wonder whether people want this, go look at the lines of people sitting
wrapped
out
around the block. Yeah, I saw some of those photos. It was
minus
incredible.
Minus 20 degrees or whatever. It was cold very cold. Forget that guy who spent the last 2-3 decades changing the mind of an entire population. We're going to make money now off of his work, and we're going to fine him and jail him and all sorts of
it's
things.
Sad.
It is such a disgrace. It's a disgrace.
They're such good people, too.
It's government. I mean, basically, that sounds exactly like what you should expect from government, regardless of if it's red, white, and blue, or or black, yellow, and red, or Sierra Leone, or South Africa, Israel, Saudi.
Just a difference in degrees.
For real.
That's all it is.
And as Michael Dean would remind us, right, if you think cannabis is bad and guns are good, the same thing will happen to your guns in a year or whatever in the near future, right? What they do to cannabis, you know, control, they can apply to any control at that point.
Right. And if you believe in freedom, you got to support freedom for people who might be doing things you don't agree with. And so whether that's the gun people supporting the freedom of the weed smokers or vice versa, we need to support everybody's freedom to live their life how they want.
So despite public, political, and business interest in greater broadband deployment, not every American has high-speed internet access yet, let alone a choice of provider for really fast, high-capacity service. So who's really to blame for strangling broadband competition? While popular arguments focus on supposed monopolists, such as big cable companies, it's government that's really to blame.
Right. Here's a hint.
Yeah.
If there's more than one, it's not a monopoly. So there may be a handful of big cable companies. They may be slow and stupid and bad at customer service, but they're still not monopolies.
Anyway. Right. Right.
The government, however, qualifies as a monopoly.
Yeah. Well, companies can make life harder for their competitors, but strangling the competition takes government. Broadband policy discussions usually revolve around the U.S. government's Federal Communications Commission, yet it's really our local governments and public utilities that impose the most significant barriers to entry. Mm. A game of kickbacks. Deploying broadband infrastructure isn't as simple as merely laying wires underground. That's the easy part. The hard part, and the reason it often doesn't happen, is the pre-deployment barriers, which local governments and public utilities make unnecessarily expensive and difficult. So before building out new networks, internet service providers must negotiate with local governments for access to publicly owned rights of way.
Right.
So that they can place their wires above and below both public and private property. ISPs also need pole attachment contracts with public utilities so that they can rent space on utility poles for above ground wires or in ducts and conduits for wires laid underground.
Right.
The problem? Local governments and their public utilities charge ISPs far more than these things actually cost.
Wow.
For example, rights of way and pole attachment fees can double the cost of network construction. So the real bottleneck isn't incumbent providers of broadband, but incumbent providers of rights of way. These incumbents, the real monopolists, also have the final say on whether an ISP can build a network. They determine what hoops an ISP must jump through to get approval. Barin Zoka, Matthews.
So in New Hampshire, there's this thing called Fast Roads, which is the government subsidized fiber that is run throughout the state. Now, it's not everywhere, but it's on like some of the main state roads. It runs down those places. And just out of curiosity, we're not that far here at the studio. We're like pretty much in the heart of not quite the heart of downtown Keene, but we're in downtown Keene, basically. And so we're not far from these main roads where these fiber connections exist. And I contacted the fiber companies. They said, well, what's it going to cost to run the fiber down the street? And basically, they calculate it by the number of poles that it has to run to.
When even well-established companies like Google are deterred by these such barriers to entry, is it really surprising that there aren't more competitors jumping into the broadband market?
Which is why Google, on their Google Fiber site, they say, if you want Google Fiber, contact your local government and ask for us, basically. Right. Because they don't want to spend the time trying to even navigate this crazy patchwork regulations.
Well, and that's the primary argument you hear from net neutrality advocates is, well, we need net neutrality because there's not real competition in the broadband market.
Yeah.
Well, why is that? Because of government, not because of, you know, monopolistic practices of companies. No, it's because of your local government and your inability to go out and get active and change it.
Well, it sure is a lot easier to just sit at home and complain on the internet.
Right. And say, I'm going to sign a petition for
there you
whatever.
Go. You've done something. You've updated your Facebook profile.
So far, everybody has benefited from clearing regulatory barriers. So far, everybody has benefited from clearing regulatory barriers for Google Fiber. And many more will benefit as local governments relax their regulations to make new entry feasible for Google Fiber and other new entrants. What open access really means is promoting easy, inexpensive, and open access to publicly owned rights of way, because broadband competition can work if localities would just get out of the way. Google showed in Kansas City and now in Austin and Provo, Utah, what just what can happen if local governments work with instead of against broadband providers to bring high-speed broadband to their citizens. Madin explained that part of the reason we selected Kansas City for the Google Fiber project was because the city's leadership and utility moved with efficiency and creativity in working with us to craft a real partnership. In return, Kansas City got a fiber network it couldn't possibly afford to build on its own or maintain.
Yeah, sure. Good luck putting the government in charge of maintaining internet connections. Yeah.
Municipalities like Provo, Utah, that thought that they could afford to build their own public fiber network, found they couldn't afford to run it. Mm. That's why Provo, Utah, sold their fiber network to Google for just $1.
I don't know if you guys know this yet, but Coinbase just opened up Bitcoin Cash.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make them money.
Yeah. I was wondering why Bitcoin Cash started shooting up in price today, and I was wondering, is there some sort of big announcement that happened? Yep. Turns out, yeah, Coinbase, I don't know if they're the world's largest, but they are one of the biggest exchanges out there on the globe. They have now added Bitcoin Cash, and it is shooting up over $3,000 right now, $3,400 for Bitcoin Cash, and I heard it's even higher on Coinbase.
Put it like this. At the beginning of the week, you could get 0.17 bitcoins with Bitcoin Cash. Now you can get 0.21.
Right. I guess you're right about that. And I'm looking at GDAX, which is Coinbase's trading platform, GDAX.com. It seems like they're getting loaded up with orders here because you can't even see anything on the price chart. There's a price of supposedly $9,500 as the last trade price, but there's just not even like any data that's showing here. So I don't know if they're broken or what. It does say partially degraded service at the top of the website. So yeah, we're seeing a huge run on Bitcoin Cash at the moment. Your thoughts, Jason?
I don't know. I just bought a bunch, so hopefully it holds together.
So by granting open access to their rights of way, local governments can drive competition and innovation in broadband infrastructure overall. After Google announced their plans for Austin, AT&T promised to follow suit, but only if they got the same terms and conditions as Google on issues such as geographic scope of offerings, rights of way, permitting, state licenses, and any investment incentives.
Sounds like a reasonable request.
Some called that hypocritical. But the fact remains that we and other broadband providers do need tech-neutral deregulation. Because broadband providers have repeatedly tried to deploy network infrastructure but gave up when cities and states demanded excessive rights-of-way fees or slowed the approval process to a crawl, even when ISPs succeeded in building new networks, they were often delayed by lengthy lawsuits. Promoting broadband deployment to all Americans therefore requires that local governments expedite rights-of-way approvals and only charge only to cover the maintenance costs, like cost of digging up a street to lay fiber.
Sure.
Even the FCC knows this. Recognizing that securing access to publicly owned infrastructure is difficult, time-consuming, and a turnoff to investment, the FCC's 2010 National Broadband Plan called on governments at all levels to ensure that network providers have easier access to poles, conduits, ducts, and rights of way.
They obviously have not gotten on.
Yeah.
The smelly, bad-smelling people are banned from riding the ART. And they're prohibited at the ART bus stops.
Wait a minute. You're saying that this – you've called in before about this ART. It's the federally funded multi-million dollar rail project that is in Albuquerque. It stands for Albuquerque Rapid Transit. You're saying that now, after taking people's money at the threat of violence, that they're not even letting people that smell bad on the bus?
Well, that's the idea. Well, I thought, do you think smokers are considered bad-smelling people? Wait, they threw them out at the bus stop, too. So the smokers are bad-smelling people. They got thrown out. And then the other smelling, the non-bathing people and people that have urine or stench on their clothes, they're going to be banned.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.